Today on the podcast, I am talking to Mr. Alvin Huban. He is the president of the Game Developers Association of the Philippines. He is professionally embedded in the global gaming industry, and he actually spearheaded or certainly oversaw gaming appearing in Southeast Asian games for the first time. So gaming is really maturing and you know, coming into its own. For those of you not aware, we're talking about like computer games, for want of a better word, and not the kind of online gambling. But gaming itself is just exploding right now with titles such as Fortnite and big global players such as Tencent, you know, just taking over the space. Earning it, it's a multi-billion dollar industry now, and you know, it seems that every child, teenager, millennial is into online gaming, and the world is just sort of growing in technical complexity. Well, the Philippines is a major player in this industry now, both in the technical aspects of game development, but also in terms of the back-end operations such as customer service and operational support. So we're going to explore all of that with Alvin. I had a fantastic conversation with him, and I'm sure you will learn a lot. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today, I am joined by Alvin Huban. Alvin, I want to start this conversation just by asking you to really define what we are talking to you about today. I think the sector can be easily miscommunicated or misunderstood. So let's start by asking you, Alvin, what is the gaming sector?
Okay, for the Philippines, under our association called GDAP, or the Game Developers Association of Philippines, this is the video game sector. We produce and we support the video game industry in many kinds of services. But for GDAP, we differentiate ourselves from the gambling side of things. So we're the non-gambling type of video games. So that should be pretty clear. And inside our membership, we also carry around a few key schools who've been teaching game development. Since for the Philippines, we still see game development as a nascent industry. It's still young, you know, it's still young. So we have a long way to go there, long way to go.
When I was a kid, gaming was, you know, super niche, and it was just these sort of spotty teenagers that would, you know, do a bit of gaming. And of course, like the older people refer to Pac-Man as the sort of the start of it all. But it's advanced a hell of a long way since then. And, you know, this is no small industry anymore. And maybe you can fact check this, but I hear it's sort of many multiples bigger than Hollywood and the movie industry. So can you give us insight into, you know, what is gaming today?
All right. So so our target, our running target, is that big announced goal that in 2020, well, pre-COVID, that the video games industry is around $159 billion worldwide. And so our running target is to achieve just 1% of that. You know, it's a huge industry. So the video games you were playing before, which was very, very niche, it's now been, you know, it's had global acceptance as a mainstream form of entertainment. Entertainment, you know, so so it's really it can swing countries' economies now. And that's why we work closely with associations like BPAP. This is why we lobby our services for promotion together with our government, because it's just it's too huge to ignore. And another good fact is Southeast Asia, you know, this little part of our world, we are the fastest rising consumers of video games. So why shouldn't we be in the game?
Yeah, absolutely. And just put it into context, what are some of the games we should be looking out for? Who are some of the sort of game shops that are producing these things?
Well, I've been one of the lucky ones that have been able to work on what we call AAA titles. So AAA titles of yore. I mean, when you say that, these are the biggest, most expensive, laboriously produced projects, usually traditionally on console. So you're talking about PlayStation or Xbox, and now you have the Nintendo Switch. Now, usually these games take an average of 2 years, at least 2 years, to make, and you're dealing with hundreds of people and huge budgets. Now, I've been one of the lucky ones to have worked on a few titles, starting from PlayStation. I did work with a former studio that still does work for Naughty Dog, which is one of the key pieces in the crown of Sony PlayStation. But now, for the last 6 years or so, I've been working with Xbox through the studio I work for now called Synergy 88 Digital. And, I use this experience to try and to tell the world, that we can do this high-end kind of service. Predominantly, we do art. We're pretty good. The Filipinos have been really, really good at art. We've been selling that in various forms. And so when I tell the world that, hey, I work on AAA titles, that means the Filipinos can output at that level. And automatically, people would understand that we can do the variances below it. Because that's 3D. So a lot of other people do 2D. So that's how that's why I guess I've been able to leverage that's how I leverage my position as president of GDAP.
And let's just wind back a little bit, Alvin. You have been intimately involved in this industry for many, many years now on many levels. As you've alluded to, you're the president of GDAP.
Yeah.
Do you want to just introduce yourself, your career, and also, what it means to be president of GDAP?
Oh, the pains. Well, I actually come from, studying. I never knew I'd end up in this industry, in all honesty. I've always been a gamer, always loved to play. And I was caught by surprise that there was a budding industry over a decade ago. I was really caught by surprise. And, I went all out when I finally got my foot in the door. And, fascinatingly enough, because of my experience in multinational corporations here, my first job in the industry was technically the head of operations of a small studio, which I had to grow. So being an older person, bunched together with a lot of young studios, I guess I got a lot of their support. And then eventually quickly became president. So when we started, we knew that our biggest challenge back then was to be discovered, because nobody really knows the Philippines. Barely anyone knows anything about Southeast Asia. If people travel for tourism, they probably know Thailand. The Philippines would probably fall between a far second. So that was our biggest dilemma. How do we tell the world that we are technically skilled to be in this kind of industry? And two, we speak their language. Because predominantly our clients in our membership, definitely this is from the Western side, North America, Canada, the English-speaking nations. So we roughly have around maybe 65 members, and that probably covers around maybe 85% of the industry. There are some outfits here which are not members of GDAP, but of course, since we are the biggest association for game development, it becomes a responsibility to promote what we do. So besides promoting the services that we do, which is, it could be art, could be a bit of programming for games, and there's definitely a lot of game support and management that we do in this country. Game testing is another thing that we're doing here. So this is, and 25% of our membership are actually the schools. That will shock a lot of people, actually, that we've actually been teaching game design and development on a baccalaureate level, that means 4 years of tertiary schooling, for the last decade as well. So we were there when course was assembled, and through the years we had to support the academe, because it's still a young industry, And so even the courses have to be developed as well. If we don't develop the right people, we'll never have the kind of supply, the kind of talent that we need to make our companies grow. So of course, obviously, besides the services, we do create our own games. But that's a high goal. Not many of our members produce their own games. Someday we'll that's what that's probably our biggest goal, you know, besides proving to the world that we are a good, competent, durable source of external development support for all these gaming companies, is that too, that we can really make globally successful games.
And to put this in context, obviously, you know, we're on an outsourcing show. We're talking about outsourcing. GDAP is you know, in essence, a form of outsourcing. You are a sub-branch of IBPAP, which is the General Outsourcing Association for the Philippines.
Yeah.
And, you know, outsourcing has a lot of definitions in its own right. But really, it's about Philippines providing staffing solutions, providing deliverables for various companies around the world for both high-skilled roles, highly technical roles, but then also the customer service and support roles associated with the gaming requirements. Yeah,
That's correct. Yeah. So I'd like to highlight, I guess everybody will understand when I say art or programming, everybody needs support in that because the world is really turning digital. So everything digital and visual is getting really high in demand. What not many people are aware of is the game support or game management roles that we have here. So in GDAP, those are actually the biggest companies that we have, biggest in terms of headcount, you know. And when I sit with the board of IBPAP, I mean, these board members are captains of really large industries. You're talking about they run 20, 30, 60,000 man companies. But in GDAP, when you say a large company, that's probably 200 people and above. That's large for us. So the game support and game management sector is huge, and it's been aggressively growing through these past years, because gaming, you know, the consumption of gaming has really changed. When we were young, you know, you go to a store, you pick out a game, stick it in a console, that's the game. I mean, that the point of purchase is just singular, and then you play your game. Nowadays, you know, games, when the way they really make money, especially because of the free-to-play aspect. Free-to-play, that means no purchase required at the beginning, but the way games are designed now, they pull you back. You know, they want to make you play more, so you get, and to play more, you'd want to rank up, and to rank up, you'd have to get special powers. But nowadays, the trend is to get special skins. Now people want to look very distinct in that world, and that has been, you know, a new economy in gaming. So the publishers need these games to be played for years. You need companies to support the players playing them. Obviously, this is, you know, all happening in the cloud. Things will go wrong. Things will go wrong. And you need people to find things for you, to fix things for you.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? It's been well spoken about the evolution in the sort of monetization model of games, and by giving them free access, it's opened up a whole new sort of, you know, access to broader communities that they never had before, and they're making 10 times the money. But I suppose it emphasizes the need for the game producers to, as you say, you know, it's not just about selling the box, it's about giving people a lifelong engagement and community. So then that creates the need for the customer service, for the community engagement and things like that, which is, you know, very naturally a good fit for the Philippines. Yeah. So have you've generally seen an explosion in that regard?
Yeah, definitely. And the one thing great about the Philippines, and besides that we speak English, and we are, you know, we have this deep Western understanding of their culture. We crack the same jokes, you know. is that we are gamers. We are a country of gamers, and we're quite vocal about it, especially online. So, and this is, I guess, what drove a lot of these game support accounts in the Philippines. Not many people know that the Philippines is a great and hot testbed for games. When you want to launch something and it's in English and you want to try it out in an English-speaking area, because usually marketing and publishing a game would be so expensive if you do it in the US directly. So you want a test market, right? Philippines is top choice. And this I heard, you know, from God's lips to my ears. A couple of years back, I went to Finland, and that's where a lot of our world's greatest mobile games have been made. You know, they made it big. You know, whatever is popular now, they started it for mobile games. And I met a guy who's a VP in Rovio, the company that makes Angry Birds. And in that crowd, when he found out I was a Filipino, you know, he goes, "Alvin, you wait there." He turns around. A minute later, he comes back and he gives me 3 plushies. And he goes, "Don't you know that we test all our games in your country before we launch it worldwide?" Ah, that was point of pride, you know, point of pride. So that's another use in the Philippines. And since another thing is we have so many Facebook users. So when you launch a game, people speak about it on Facebook. So the companies, that allows them a communication. You know, they get feedback from all this social media noise. So they get a chance to fix their games, you know, before they really market it to the rest of the world. So there's a great value in us.
Yeah, the Philippines is really, you know, it's establishing a strong reputation in the space. And considering it is one of the fastest growing sectors globally, certainly for entertainment, it's a really good spot to be in, isn't it? I mean, you know, just earlier on, you mentioned the art requirement for these games, and by art, you know, I might think that it's the design on the box that sells the game, but actually, you know, computer games now they have some of the most complex computing and technology and graphics and animation in them. Can you explain what art is for the gaming sector?
Okay, so for the AAA market, you know, when you talk about games like Gears of War or Last of Us, just Google them on YouTube and you see that these characters create an entirely new world and they look so real. You know, you could actually smell them already. So that kind of fidelity is something that we can do. Now, in a video game of that level, you know, when people get a desire to work in a game like that, the first inclination is say, "I want to design those characters in the game," right? But what not many people understand is the characters in a game are actually very few, you know. But the biggest job, the biggest task for absolutely most games, 99% of the games, is the environment. You know, the world around it, the walls, the buildings, the vehicles, the weapons, the camos. That, you know, takes a lot of work and hundreds of people to achieve. And those are the kinds of artwork that is mostly outsourced. You know, for the top level companies, the main characters are just kept within the company because that takes so much detail to create and polish. An average character, and you can imagine a character moving inside the game, like it's so real already. The rigging, the animation, the damage that they could get, that takes, you know, great detail and great time. So they keep it mostly internal. But for the rest, you know, 90% of the assets, that's what we call them, that should clearly be outsourced, because, well, you can't, you know, the service requirement for these games, I said, takes around 2 years. So it's better economically for a company to hire an outsourced firm for that length of a time. And then, you know, for a contract. So when they release the game, you know, they save a lot of money.
Right.
As against hiring a team of 500, you know, continually. Not many video game companies can maintain 500 or more people 24/7, 365.
And so the Philippines now is at the pinnacle of this sector, and the sector is at the pinnacle of like creative computing. And this is a long way away from what a lot of people think of the Philippines, which is just basic call center functions. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really great to see that, it's playing at the top of the game in some of these most complex markets. Where do you see, is it a little bit like China, how, for one or two decades they were the production house for American companies, and then eventually they adopted all of the skills and they eventually outperformed the US companies. Do you see that evolution for the Philippines?
That's what really changed. It's really hard actually to get into the Chinese market, because you are very correct. After a long time of being the key outsource for the North American companies in Canada, they are actually owners of the biggest gaming companies around the world. They have invested. Not only did they create, they bought a lot of the games that the world plays today. But for the Philippines, I don't see us, as we develop, obviously, I think we'll get more exposure and more contracts with the existing North American market, the English-speaking world. I doubt if we will get inside China, but I do dream of going more and deeply inside Japan. Japan, it's geographically it's small, but the video game market is extremely huge. And everyone knows that in terms of demographics, they have an aging society. So they need a young creative workforce to help them out. And my God, they're only 3 hours away, my friend. And another thing is, we love what they do. We love their culture. We love their art. So I think that is a growth point that we as the Philippines should invest more in. And I think we're going to do it.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And there's just, I love an industry where there's so much talk of growth and opportunities, and there's an opportunity here, there's an opportunity there. It's certainly refreshing compared to a lot of the maturer markets and maturer countries, where, everything is sort of past the maturation curve, and it's more just about, grabbing market share from others. So it's really exciting to see. Alvin, to expand this to the broader audience that we speak to and outsourcing generally, the message that I want people to take away from this is, I get clients inquiring saying, do you think you can find a VA that can possibly talk to my client and, maybe generate some sales? And I'm like, look, don't just stop there. Build your entire company from the Philippines. There's every skill set, there's every profession here. And I think, as you said at the beginning, the Filipinos are very gifted at the creative pursuits, and that might be art, it might be, design,
music,
and that extends into music and web design, creative. It's also big. It's a different subsector to you, but there's also the separate animation vertical, isn't there? And there's a lot of CGI and animation done for Hollywood movies and post-editing and things like that. So, what do you say to the skill base of the Philippines and the opportunities here for businesses to tap into that? This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
You mentioned a key vertical that we haven't been able to crack yet, and that is CGI video, 3D animation. So we do a lot of animation. That's the market that you've heard of. Yeah, we do for the 2D animation. You know, the Scooby-Doos, that's always a term we use, the Scooby-Doos. We've been doing that for generations in the Philippines. And again, not many people know that. So, and we want to expand that market. We are truly skilled with that because we grew up with it. We grew up with the Scooby-Doos, the 2D animations on TV, and we can do vast more work with that. And a key attribute, again, that my friends in the animation industry use, because most of those shows have high comedy, and it's in English, and it's very, you know, very cultural. It's very trendy. Again, we get the humor, you know, get the jokes. So in building, so when they get a script, the Filipinos have this natural affinity to creating it visually, because we know that the facial reactions to a joke, the delivery of something funny, that's us. We know it. You know, compared to another provider in another country who does not naturally speak English, you know, there many things are lost in translation. You know, there
may be it's the subtleties, isn't it? Yeah, and it's the nuance, and it's the sort of little cultural head nods that there's all the value in that. And as you say, you know, obviously these production houses are entrusting sort of $100 million, $200 million projects, and all those nuances have to be correct, don't they? Right. It's such a such a valuable skill.
Yeah, we can pick that up and run with it over time. You got to trust in that Philippine talent that we love learning all these new technologies. We will dedicate the rest of our lives, you know, mastering these technologies.
Definitely. This is a little bit out of your wheelhouse, but the development side, the coding side, and I don't even know what kind of coding is involved in games.
Yeah.
But you know, where do you see the developers of the Philippines, coders, anything from sort of websites to apps to then gaming? Where does the Philippines sit in terms of that?
Yeah, you're right. So when we do present ourselves in a roadshow, we clearly define the skill sets that we can offer the rest of the world. So in my market, the AAA market, sadly, we cannot do that kind of programming. Not yet. We still need a lot to learn, because that's very, very high-end programming, which we are not used to. And another kind of programming, when you play games, which a lot of people play online, like for example, Dota, MMOs, you know, the networking part of that, of those games. Again, we don't have much experience in that, so we don't sell those. You know, we don't sell those. The programming that we can do are the casual mobile games. You know, the really easy, easy to download, easy to understand mobile games that you play for, you know, anywhere from 30 seconds to 5 minutes. Most of the games of the world are actually those games, the casual games. If you look at by the numbers, 60% of the people around the world play those casual games. So it's a huge market, and you know, we can do that. Now to support that, when you're talking about websites or other graphic visual needs for digital or print, dude, we have that down pat. It may not be under our here's another thing that we do on that side of the fence. When you talk about like posters, why can I say that we can do globally acceptable designs or even posters? So that's another thing we've been doing in AAA games. So besides the 3D stuff I do, when we're building the worlds, so imagine we build a city. When we build a city, we don't copy New York. No, no. We make our own cities. You know, it can be at any given point in time of history. It can be of any art style. So besides building all these structures, you have to brand them. You have to decorate them. So that's another task on the 2D side. We put in, you know, our own brands of soft drinks along the, you know, littering the streets. Can you imagine that? The signs on the buildings. Yeah, we do that. So definitely we can build those communication materials, those branding materials for the English-speaking part of the world.
Alvin, would you eventually see, you know, are there worlds created that just sit on the shelf? And so if you want to, you know, create a game that's walking around New York City, you effectively build a New York, and then anyone can buy that New York street scene, and then you can put in fighters or gunmen or, you know, and create your city from there. Will that kind of happen? Like, will there be a franchising or a templating of worlds going forward?
There are actually a lot of services like that can sell key assets or group of assets online. There are, I mean, you know, that's a thing with video games right now. It's so big, and it's become so democratic that anybody, virtually almost anybody, can, you know, learn it even online. You know, learn a section or something about video gaming, get and hop into a role. And then when you're hopping into that role, you can find so much online resources. So it's we've come to a point that it's really easy to, if you really want to learn something, especially on video games, it's there. You know, it's like a degree away. Everything you can download, buy off the net. Whereas 10 years ago, or maybe even more than that, I have friends who have been in the industry for over 20 years. And they go, during that time, you know, they really felt special. You know, very few people were called, you know, game developers back then. It was so specialized, it was so secretive, you know. But now, it's a common term now. You know, so, and again, having all this, I guess, even makes it, you know, gives us another advantage again in the Philippines, because what other people can access in another country, we can do so as well here. You know, anything they produce, if they produce a podcast, you know, a webcast on English, speaking about a game, how it does live operations, man, give it to us, we'll listen, and we can learn it, and we can help you
as well. That's one of the big messages I you know, try and repeat and get out there, and especially spread across the Philippines, but also the rest of the world. It's becoming one world market. You know, the millennials in the Philippines are growing up on a diet of exactly the same information, forums, culture as the millennials in, you know, any country. Name your country, and it's becoming homogenized, which is both good and bad. But I think for the Philippines, it's giving people an opportunity that they previously never had access to. You know, 20 years ago, as you said, you were separated by technology, you were separated by oceans, you were separated by politics, but now you pretty much have access to anything you want. And it's a great leveler, isn't it? And certainly exciting. You know, and it's great for the Philippines because I think they can jump up, you know, in terms of development of the country but also it's a great opportunity for countries in the West, because you can access incredible resources and, you know, you can access a workforce of 8 billion people now instead of just being confined to the workforce from your hometown. It's profound, huh?
Definitely.
So, Alvin, just let's talk business. Obviously, you know, we're in the midst or hopefully, you know, kind of coming out the other end of coronavirus. How has that affected gaming? How has that affected your industry? You know, from an outsider's point of view, I would have thought that gaming participation would have shot up with everyone sitting at home, you know, commuting less. What's the environment looking like?
So it's all over social media. Gaming surge globally. Oh my goodness, it went wild. The entire world was in lockdown, my friend. It was only natural. And Phil Spencer of Microsoft said, you know, we got here to this level, but we didn't know, but we're not, this was not the exact situation that we wanted to get to this level, you know?
Mm.
We're happy, but cautious in our, the way we speak about the great surge in the consumption of video games. So a lot of people ask me that. Well, Alvin, it's surged all around the world. So did all your companies surge as well? Well, first, you know, we feel so blessed that we are in this industry, you know, pandemic or not, because it is digital. And being grounded in digital, basically video games, it allows us to be kind of, I don't know, we are used to being portable. So when the lockdown happened, most of us, especially in the Philippines, knew what to do and knew exactly how we could do a work for home oriented production while keeping it, you know, on high levels. I would like to say among our membership, it just took us a week. Some companies just took a day, you know, it's hardly a blip, they continued production. So when you say the surge, going back to that surge globally, that surge really meant that people were playing more of the top 50 or top 100 games around the world. You know, they played it more, and the owners of these games just made a killing, and they continue to do so. They made, oh my goodness, some have, 150% more revenue year on year because of this 5 month, 6 month lockdown. So going back to the Philippines, how did we do after that surge? So at most we say, so besides, okay, we survived, okay, we were surviving. At most, across the board, I think the growth was only a modest 10 to 15%. In terms of service work, that's pretty much the same as well. The people who produce video games in the Philippines say the same thing. You know, Alvin, yes, more people downloaded our games. But you see, most of the games, the mobile games from the Philippines, they survive on ads. But with the lockdown, although people were playing more games, the ads lightened up, you know. So the revenue did not really accumulate the way they expected. So again, they said, yeah, there's a bit more profit, but only 10 or 15%. Now, in the service sector, that's where I'd say the 15 to 18% rise happened, even in art, particularly in art, you know. Unfortunately, I think in some parts of the world where some of our competitors are, they weren't able to survive the lockdown. You know, companies had to close. And this is my perception, you know, in my little circle of the world. And so these game owners, these game production companies had to find new partners. And, or two, because of the surge, they got encouraged, you know, there's more cash in the bank, that, hey, let's do more, you know, let's extend the game. Let's do more game modes, more tournaments. So that's happening. That's happening. We're quite fortunate we caught some of that. And obviously, since people were playing these top 50 games for longer periods of time, the game support sector now becomes extremely important, you know, because more people are playing. So it's been good.
It's interesting that even, you know, in a sector that has, you know, there's an obvious net gain there. When you zoom in, when you scratch under the surface, there's a lot of complexity to any picture, isn't there? And there's winners and losers within any ecosystem. And especially with coronavirus, there's been a lot of volatility, a lot of change. So I imagine there's clear winners, clear losers, and it's the great reshuffle. Yeah. And I just want to, you know, bring our attention finally maybe to the Southeast Asia Games. It's called eSports. You know, previously gaming wasn't even considered a thing, then it became a thing, and now it's a sport, and now it's in the Southeast Asia Games, and you were pretty heavily involved in that. Do you want to give us a rundown on that?
I call it one of the highlights of my career. So we call internally, I call you know, it's the esports or the competitive playing of video games. That's what it is. That's esports. In terms of revenue, I mentioned earlier that, you know, video games in total is like $159 billion, and that's hard to match. But esports is supposed to achieve around $1.3 billion this year, pre-COVID again. You know, if you compare it that way, it's small. But what people are seeing now is it grew so fast. Esports. And the thing with esports is it produces a lot of content online, and people are fascinated with it. You know, watching other people play, it's become a whole new genre of media. You know, watching other gamers play in a tournament, these players now become heroes. You know, they're uniform, they belong to a team, and they're highly paid to do this. And the prize pools for, you know, quite a few tournaments are amazingly huge. You know, a few months ago, a 14-year-old kid won the first grand tournament for Fortnite, and I don't know, he won like $20 million.
Wow, yeah. I assume he's got his own following as well. He's probably getting millions of views on YouTube. Sure. That's probably just petty cash for him, yeah.
Yeah, so imagine even managing that following of his, that's become an entire new industry. So if he speaks about, you know, being a champion, they're putting it on a webcast, that's video on YouTube, that's a whole other vertical of revenue. You know, So again, this gives video games a new face. Originally, we just wanted to earn basically from the games that we built, you know. But now the brands can get more face time. You know, a brand can actually support an entire tournament and get, you know, really, really good eyeballs for an extended period of time. And you have to understand, for most of these tournaments, the fans are so highly engaged, so anything that you put in front of them will imprint on them. You know, so the dream now of esports, and I think it's really going to happen, especially during this pandemic. And my friend, I don't know how long this pandemic is going to last, and so the people that continue, you know, since the landscape of how general business now is totally disrupted. So a lot more people have to get online to market either their service or especially their products. Now, the first reaction when you say, hey, let's become more prominent online, people will think of doing better websites, you know, pushing out better EDMs. But think about it. Wouldn't esports be a more exciting way to show your brand? Wouldn't it be a more dynamic and new way, you know, to tell the people about your product or your service? So for esports, it's usually the people in the computer industry that support them. You know, it's Intel or Razer. You know, these are the game for peripherals. But what can happen, and I think will happen, is the non-endemic brands will come in. For example, now there's a tournament by one organizer, and the sponsor is Axe, you know, it's the Dio perfume thing for the guys. So can you see it? So now it's something very, very new, and a lot of people, the people I know in corporate business, are getting really, really, really curious about it. You know, it's a brand new world, my friend. It's a brand new world.
And I find it so exciting, Alvin, that, you know, that the Philippines is, you know, somewhat in the epicenter of this brand new world, of this, you know, explosive new economy. Yeah. You know, and that was never the case 10, 20, 30 years ago. The Philippines was always trailing behind. The Philippines was always struggling to shine. Yeah. And I think that is a sign of the new world that we're entering. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a technology is a leveler. It doesn't matter geographically where you are anymore. Yeah. And it's more of a meritocracy. So I find it so super exciting that these new worlds are emerging, and and you know, everyone is given equal opportunity now to really shine and perform well in these new worlds. So super exciting. Alvin, I want to thank you so much for giving this, you know, unique insight into this burgeoning new sector. And can you let us know if anyone wants to find out more, if they want to become a gamer, if they want to have a chat to you, or where can they go, Alvin?
Well, my email is always available, alvin.huban@gdap.org.ph, or simply just look for me on Facebook. You know, again, GDAP, we're not about games. We're about the business of games, you know, and that's what we want. That's what we want to talk about. We want to help other companies build better games for the rest of the world.
That was Alvin Huban of GDAP. If you want to get in touch with Alvin or know any more about anything we discussed, go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.